Hi, HR Nation. Welcome back to another episode of the HR Leaders Podcast, the show where we explore the future of work with industry experts and HR executives from the world's leading global brands. Today on the show, I'm joined by Serena Rami, who's the Global Vice President of HR at Beiersdorf. Welcome to the show. How are you?
Hey, Chris. Good to see you again.
Yeah, nice to see you again.
Thank you for having me. I'm doing great. Thank you for asking.
Fantastic. And congratulations again on the new role. How are you settling in?
Settling in really well. Really nice new challenge for me, which is great. After spending some time with Kraft Heinz, a completely different culture, I'm really happy to start this new journey and this new project with Beiersdorf. So settling in really well.
Amazing. Good to hear. For those that can see you right now, tell us some more about those pictures behind you.
As I call them, Thelma and Louise. Actually, I saw them at a gallery. I think it was in Dubai at the time. I was just visiting for a few days, and I liked them both, but I bought one. I bought it, but I didn't know how to ship it. I was moving from China to the Netherlands back then.
Oh, wow.
So I didn't even have an apartment. I didn't even have, you know, an idea where I'm going to put them. But I liked them so much, and I bought the one with the sunglasses, and mm-hmm. I just kept them in storage there until I got my apartment. And when I moved in, I got it shipped, and then I found the other one in Germany and got it here, and now they're
really
on the wall.
Before we go any further, tell everyone a little bit more about you personally, you know, and your journey and how you got started and where you are now.
Absolutely. Well, I was born and raised in Lebanon during the time of the war in Lebanon. So I think that's something that is really interesting because it helped a lot in shaping my personality and getting me to where I am today. I'm a firm believer of like any misfortune that you go through in your life or any bad situation, it helps you and it shapes you to be able to benefit from it later on. So this is what happened. I grew up in Lebanon, and then when I graduated with a master's in industrial psychology, I was on my way to Australia and did the stopover in Dubai. The stopover lasted a little bit longer than expected, and basically that's where I started my career. I started in sales, and then I moved into HR because I felt that this is an area where I can make a change. So differently than probably other HR professionals, I actually started in something completely different and was attracted to HR because I felt that this is an area that we can modernize and that we can kind of bring to the next level. And for the past 20 years, I've been living like a nomad, most recently in China. And for the past 3 years, I've been living in the Netherlands. And now between the Netherlands and Germany, but yeah, so this is in brief.
Wow. No, it's wow. So much to unpack there. And, firstly, you're not that unusual in the sense that I think the vast majority of people I've ever had on the show, none of them planned on being in HR. They came from sales, marketing, supply chain, operations, and they found their way there. And similar to you, they felt that this is an area that aligns with my why, my purpose, and where I feel like I can have impact as well. And by the way, as someone who didn't have the easiest of upbringings, you know, I agree with you in terms of the resilience.
And I think what is really interesting and what is really good is that the moment that you become proud of this background, that you become proud of what you have gone through, rather than being ashamed, as you mentioned, or being, you know, embarrassed somehow by it, I think the moment that you start to feel like, yeah, I went through this and I'm actually proud of who I am today and where I've gotten, because the truth is, you are the one who got yourself to where you are today. You overcame all these difficulties and all these things that happened in your life without you wanting them to. You never asked for any misfortune to happen, right? You never caused it yourself, but then you were able to kind of get through it. And this is something that I also look in certain talents, depending on the need that we have. And I like people who are working hard to overcome a difficult situation or to kind of work their way in their career, because I think it's important rather than being handed things over a silver plate and then for you just to kind of benefit from it.
Yeah. But tell me more about your lifestyle, because you've worked all over the world. You know, multiple continents, What are some of the lessons you've learned that you could share with our listeners? And if there are people listening right now that are considering something, doing something similar, what advice would you give to them?
I think, Chris, the biggest lesson that I've received so far, because I believe that there are still a lot of lessons in life that we're going to have. So you never stop to learn, that, right? Life teaches you in every single opportunity there is. But my biggest lesson was in China, actually. And this is something that I would probably pass on, which is know your limits, know your boundaries. I mean, being resilient, it's a virtue, and somehow it's a strength that you have. But sometimes it can work against you, because being too resilient makes you believe that you can overcome any situation. And then you get into this being overtired mode. And then when you're overtired, you just don't realize. And then you can't sleep and your body's not functioning properly and you don't know why, and you get frustrated. And I think when I went to China, which is for me one of the best experiences, whether it's on a professional or a personal level, I gained a lot, I learned a lot, and I fought a lot, because it's a culture that is very different than anywhere else. It's a language that I don't speak, and there's difficulty in connecting and communicating with people. So that, you know, gave me the drive to kind of like, no, I can do it. I can find a way, and so on. So I did that for a couple of years. And then I got to a point where I was fighting in order for me to kind of like become better and be okay. But then I didn't accept that it's okay to let go sometimes and not to be okay. And then to say, well, you know what, I'm tired and I need a break, or I need to move out of this, you know, a place where I have to constantly, you know, fight for what I need or what I want. And fight as in an inner fight, not fighting with other people, but then you're fighting with yourself, because you're pushing yourself to every day to go and face a certain situation that is not ideal. So for me, it was realizing what my boundaries are and acknowledging that there are boundaries in life, and that sometimes you, instead of hitting the wall directly, what you need to do is take a step back and then reconsider. Sometimes you would say, yeah, I'm just going to continue. I just needed that 5 minutes breather. Or you're actually going to say, well, you know what, there's another road for me. And I think that was the biggest lesson. And I think people should realize what their boundaries are and realize that sometimes too much resilience and too much positivity can backfire. So that's why a good moderation would help in this.
Yeah. I know another area you're really passionate about is sort of women in leadership. Yes. So I'd love to hear more about that. Obviously, as a leader yourself, and someone who's not only you've led, you know, in multiple, again, cultures, companies, countries, and different. So you must have experienced a lot, good and bad, I'm sure, unfortunately, along the way. So I'd love to hear your thoughts, and also again some of the lessons learned and advice that you can pass on to leaders that are coming up through the ranks, let's say.
Yeah, I think what is common today anywhere you go in the world, for any woman leader, I would say, is the fact that you are always made to feel that this is something that is given to you and not something that is normal or natural. It's, and when you look around the world right now about the D&I, diversity and inclusion KPIs that most companies and the drives that companies are having, it's more of a number that people are trying to get to, more than the quality. At least that's my personal opinion, where I'm glad that this is happening, because at least, you know, it's getting the movement started. But it's more of a number. We need to reach that number. People keep on talking about that.
Checking the box. We have this many. Yeah,
exactly. Mm-hmm. And then reaching a 50%, 60%, 70%. So you hear that. But no one is really talking about something that I personally believe is more fundamental. What are we doing in society in order to make sure that this is something that is normal and not something that we work towards, but that's something that we live? What are we doing about the education? What are we doing about educating women, especially in countries and places where, let's say, the society is not as advanced as in others, in order not to name, let's say, certain countries or cultures? But what are we doing in order to have that equality, not just today in what is impacting our present, but what is impacting our future as well, and the future of our kids? So for me, yes, I am very passionate about it, but I'm also thinking along with many others I know, because I have a lot of a big network, let's say, of women leaders, then we're all kind of thinking like, what are we going to do in order to make this the normal way of society or business even, rather than something that we're trying to achieve through KPIs and objectives and a company target and so on. So I would say the biggest lesson is, first of all, individually, to feel that this is not something that is being handed over to you, that this is something that that is your right as a woman to be in this leadership role. You don't have to work double or work hard in order to get it. You need to work hard in order for you to get what you deserve, but not to be a woman in a leadership role. Same thing for men. I think equality should be there. But at the same time, it should be done in a natural way and not in an injected way or inorganic. It should be very organic. Are we there in the organic sense? No, we're not, because societies are still not there yet. There are certain countries, there are certain cultures where it's more advanced, while in others it's not.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting, right? Because you're right. When you look at the DEI, sometimes it feels like you're just putting people in the role because you want to hit a quota, as opposed mm-hmm. to having the right people in the role. And if you only have that focus and you don't focus on the beginning, like you said, education, etc., then you're never going to solve the root cause. You're basically always going to be in a reaction mode, as opposed to actually, you know, dealing with the real issues, the underlying issues. What do you think that is holding us back? Because we all know this. This isn't new. Why do you think we're still, you know, going through this tick the box exercise rather than actually putting our attention on the real issues?
I think because it's a social code. It's not a business code. See, the business follows the society. And again, when you look at in social environments, in a place, for example, like the Netherlands, I don't think that there is this issue as much as probably somewhere else in countries where, again, women's rights are not acknowledged or are not at the same level. So I think that this is what is holding us back. It's the social code. It's the political stuff. It's the religious mm-hmm. Stuff as well. So I think there are a lot of factors. You can't just pin it down to one. But I think it's about starting again in education, because I believe that education is everything. And education, not just in schools, but also at homes. And then if you look today, for example, look at all the refugee camps that you have around the world. I think that's a good start. You could start from there and then bring in that education, because these are young, will become one day very successful. They will have actually a great story to tell, that, you know, they survived, you know, through very tough conditions and so on. And one day they will become hopefully successful women leaders. So let's start from there. Let's start also with the schooling systems and the acknowledgement of the equality between men and women and so on. So I really think that we should start from there, and it shouldn't be just to pin it down to one thing. I think it's a combination of different things.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and back to our conversation earlier about resilience. You give kids and people like that the opportunity, they'll do incredible things.
Exactly. But it's not just about resilience. And you were giving the example about your daughter who has everything. And today, luckily, you are able to provide to her the things that back then you didn't have, and many others did not have as well. But I think it's about finding new things, because as human beings, we are not kind of like confined to one situation or one condition. I think we need to find a way that we can develop the kids today with, because it's a reality. Internet is here. A lot of commodities that we didn't have in the past here today.
Yeah.
So now we need to be creative rather than say, well, you know, in the past it was like that and that's how we did it. Rather than let's think, okay, this is what we have today. How can we build from what we have today in order to make sure that, you know, our kids will get the best? And what is the best? What is needed for the future? And so you need to customize rather than plug and play or kind of just say, well, this is what it was. This is how it worked in the past. So it's going to continue working that way.
Yeah. And then with the evolution comes different types of challenges. As an example, right, I have a nephew, and his challenge, although he has everything he wants, is the resilience of online bullying. And so, through social media, we didn't have to deal with that as kids, you know, of dealing with this new world of online where people can say mean things and hide behind a camera and cause This episode of the HR Leaders Podcast was brought to you by our friends at Achievers. Two-thirds of employees have one foot out the door in 2024, and the top reason to job hunt? Better compensation. But money isn't everything. The Achievers 2024 Engagement and Retention Report reveals that employees crave emotional salary too. What does emotional salary mean? And what are the ways to increase emotional salary to engage and retain top talent? Learn more about motivating your employees beyond just pay by visiting achievers.com/HR leaders. Again, that's achievers.com/HR leaders. Let's get back to the episode. Horrible issues as well. So again, it's, you know, yes, they have the internet and yes, they have resources, but that in itself comes with other challenges that come along the way as well, which we all have to recognize as well.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And how do we help them to overcome it? I think that this is the big question here. Mm-hmm. Rather than them thinking of the consequences of this, let's think, okay, how do we, so we work on the psychology of and the, let's say, the self-confidence of, as an example, the children who go through, let's say, this type of abuse or bullying or et cetera. Or do we fix the kids who are doing the bullying? I think that's what we need to think about rather than, because it's a reality. It is happening. We can't, run away from it. Mm-hmm. We just need to think of solutions that would be also consistent for later on rather than just solving the problem of today.
Yeah. I have a personal question that I want to ask you, because I speak to many female leaders who sometimes, I don't know how to phrase it in the right way, but worry that they can't have a career perhaps like yours and balance family, etc. at the same time. You know, how can I get to this leadership role whilst being a great mom, a great wife, travel? I'm sure you're not doing a lot of nodding there. So obviously something you've thought about, and many then just don't do it. They don't take the opportunities that, and they think that I can't do that. So I just wanted to get your thoughts on that.
Absolutely. I think that the reason why I'm nodding and I'm smiling is because I have a lot of my close either family members or friends that have the same dilemma. And we were just having a conversation with one of my childhood friends the other day, and she was telling me, oh, you know what, I wasted my life just to raise my two kids, and you know, I wanted to have a career, but then I couldn't, you know, with my children and so on. So I asked her one simple question. I said, everything that you did for your kids is amazing, no doubt about that. I mean, you get the trophy of the year, you get the biggest award for being the best mom. While you were doing that, did you ever stop to think that your kids also need a role model? They don't just need you to be the perfect mom that does everything. Did you ever stop to think of what you need, and then how would that reflect on your kids? The reason why I'm mentioning this is because it's important for us as women to first ask the right questions rather than get carried away with, let's say, what we think is the right thing, right? Because we were raised in a certain way, or society has imposed a certain, let's say, social code or norms that we need to have, that you need to do this or you need to do that. I think you need to ask yourself, is this what I need to do? Whether it's from a career point of view or from a family point of view. I think we need to be able to be diverse, because there are women that would say, well, I just want to work part-time, and that is possible. So you can go and do it. And there are companies that say, well, you know what, I need somebody who is available 24/7, and that for me, it doesn't work, right? That's a culture that you know that you will not get into, because you know that this is their expectation. So there comes a choice where you first ask yourself, what is it that you want? If you want that balance, then go and find the place and the culture and the organization that helps you to have that. So to answer your question in a more direct way, I think the dilemma will always be there. But first, the first step in order to sort that dilemma is to ask ourselves the question, what is it that we really want? And what is it that we really can give? And what is it that we can actually give to a certain extent and not go maybe 100%, so that remaining part we can invest it in, again, in a career or a project or a social cause or whatever you want to call it. So I think sometimes we get carried away with a big idea or something that we were fed or we were told, rather than to think for ourselves and then go and find it.
I agree, because I also speak to many senior female leaders who have to have that conversation with their partner as well to say, you know, I want to go off and pursue this career, but it means that one of us has to be the stay-at-home parent. And that's a conversation that they've mentioned a few times on the show, that it's not easy to sit down with your partner and say, or you know, your husband, and say, you know, I'm gonna, you know, be the main breadwinner, and we're gonna do this, and you're gonna be a stay-at-home, you know, father. And there's many female leaders that I speak to that they can't even imagine having that conversation. So they don't, and then they put everything else first before themselves.
And that's one example. And then you have a lot of examples. One of the things that I really appreciate in when I'm interviewing, let's say, female candidates for whatever role, whether it's a leadership role or not, is when they are very clear and transparent about what they need. I was interviewing somebody for actually a leadership role in Asia. And she said, well, my son has very important exams next year in his academic year. And therefore, I know for a fact that I'm going to need to spend this much time with him. So I will be able to join the company and do this job if I'm allowed to kind of take these weeks off. And then she kind of like came with a schedule, and she already knew what she wanted. And even though some of the hiring managers did not want to hire her because of her unavailability, I actually managed to convince them at the end that actually she is the one that we need. Because she came, she was very determined. She knew how to organize, you know, her time and so on. And she knew exactly how to multitask, because she already had a plan. And I think that this is a great example. Again, we cannot generalize. And I think that there are a lot of
examples. There's so many.
I don't want this to be misinterpreted as if, you know, everyone should kind of do that. I know that sometimes it's not possible, but whenever you can, you should go and join a company that would appreciate that part in that, having that balance between you as a mother, as a wife, as a daughter, or, you know, as an independent woman and as a career woman at the same time. Those are the cultures that would value that. Those are the company cultures. If a company culture doesn't foster that, it doesn't mean that they are wrong. It's just that they are different. But I think we live in a world that is so vast, that is so big, that we can allow ourselves those choices.
I also brought that up as well, because I can't remember the exact numbers, but we saw, you know, millions of women after the pandemic didn't return to the workplace as well. I'm sure you've seen and heard about that as well. And I think some of the things we just spoke about are some of those reasons. But I could definitely say that during the pandemic, my wife took on a lot more responsibilities and had a much harder job than I did. You know, me being here doing the job, I felt like was an easy job, and she was at home both doing her full-time job and taking care of our three-year-old daughter Robin, which was tough on everyone, and but more so her. And there was actually a conversation at one point where she was, I don't know if I want to go back, and I'm sure, and many women didn't.
It's funny, we were talking about the return to office before this whole new wave, let's say, hit Europe recently. But before that, we were kind of like, and we're always actually talking about the return to office. What would the new normal look like? And one of the things that we were saying is that we expect people to come back, especially women, because the example of your wife applies to many, many, many others, millions of women around the world. We expect people to come back to a normal that we imagine is going to remain the same as before the pandemic, which is working, let's say, from 9 to 7, 8 p.m. And you know, and sometimes during the weekend, having to send emails and so on and so forth. But the reality is, are we thinking of this new reality? And especially when we talk about the mental well-being, when we talk about the setting the boundaries, right, between your personal and your work life and so on. We keep on forgetting that we ask people to change their lifestyles and then to kind of be work-at-home parents, both men and women, in order to be fair, and then to reshuffle their priorities. All of a sudden, you're able to take your child to a kindergarten or to school to drop them there because you're working from home and now you have this ability. you all of a sudden you're able to enjoy your breakfast, or even to make it to the dinner table, let's say, from your office, which is probably the guest bedroom or the basement or etc. And then you're able to make it to dinner. And then all of a sudden now, when we talk about the return to the office, we're telling people, well, you know what, all these priorities and all this lifestyle that you had over the past 18 months or soon to be 2 years, just forget about it. Disrupt your children's
because we need to see you in the office.
Exactly, because we need to see you in the office. And now this is the biggest conversation that we're having around the world. All HR communities are having this conversation. What would it look like? Because some companies have been very, I would say, adventurous, and they already announced the flexible ways of working, while other companies are still waiting to see, okay, when will this end? How will it be? And other companies are kind of like sticking to their old way of doing things and saying, no, as soon as this is over, we're going to come back to the normal office hours. But what we need to do is to take into consideration that this whole pandemic has disrupted people's lives. And then people have gotten used to a certain way of doing things, families, specifically children, wives, husbands, etc. And now what we need to do is to think of, what do we learn from this? What same as IT. I think IT learned a lot from this pandemic, which accelerated, let's say, the IT revolution somehow. So now how do we learn from this, and how do we make it consistent moving forward, which would benefit women to balance that career and personal life, which would benefit as well men, because it's not just about men, not just about women, but it's also about men and having that balance. Because then it has an impact on the family and on society as well.
Yeah, no, I agree. We've got a lot of work to do. We've got a lot of work ahead of us. Before I let you go, where can people connect with you if they want to reach out and say hi? Where's the best place for them to connect with you?
I think LinkedIn would be the best place, right? And usually when I'm having, let's say, either a couple of public speaking or like some really interesting topics that we're talking about, or there's another podcast that would come out also soon. So I usually share it on my LinkedIn.
Amazing. Well, look, thank you so much for taking the time to join us. I know you're going to be in London soon, so I'll definitely have to come and see you in person and say hi.
Absolutely.
But again, congratulations on the new role. Super excited for you, you know, this new journey you're on. And until then, enjoy the holidays, and I'll see you again soon.
Thanks, Chris. And I really appreciate it. And I just have one request. Please keep on doing what you're doing. It's great. I listen to the podcasts that you have. Whenever I can, especially when I'm driving between Amsterdam and Hamburg, which is a 4-hour drive.
It's a long one.
So you keep me entertained, absolutely.
Thank you.
During the 4 hours, which is really good. And also you enrich my knowledge, let's say. I love your style and asking the questions and so on. So please keep on doing that. I think the HR community needs a forum like this. And count on me. As you know, I'm always ready to help out in any topic or anything that I can.
No, I appreciate it. That means a lot. It means a lot to me. We'll promise each other, if you keep listening, I'll keep recording. How about that? Yeah?
Fantastic.
Deal.
All right. You take care.
All right. Bye-bye. Ciao. Thank you.
Bye-bye.